Hello and welcome to Queering Eve, a spoiler-free-ish podcast about the TV show Killing Eve, made by some queers.
Hi, I'm Nina, and I'm the one who has a new notebook for notes on this show.
Exciting.
I finished my first one on the first two seasons, so now we have a new one. Now I have a new one. And yes, I do think that's exciting.
Hi, I'm Tamara, and I'm the one who kinda knows how to play D&D now. And I have never played D&D, nor have I read anything on D&D, but I am now watching this show called Critical Role, in which people play D&D, and I have gathered from context.
Hi, I'm Naya, and I'm the one who is very happy about the amount of pets I got to pet this week. Because I was cat-sitting for my friends, and then also two of our office dogs were in the office this week. And even one who is generally very scared of people, I guess, got used to me a bit more, and he came to me for pets, and he's so soft.
Yay.
Spent a lot of my work time on the floor with a dog.
Queering Eve, 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 Eve.
Hi and welcome to the third season. Are you excited, Nina and Tamara?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, I was just gonna say, for me, this is the only season that I didn't binge watch, so it's a very different experience for me. Like, our viewing experience was that we and a group of our friends each watched the episode and then got together on a Zoom call and talked about it. And that's where the idea for this podcast was born, because I was like, we are so smart and funny. We could totally have a podcast about this. So let's get into this first episode.
The first episode of season 3 is called Slowly Slowly Catchy Monkey. It was directed by Terry McDonald? He's directed a bunch of stuff. Breaking Bad and a spin-off of Breaking Bad. Not just that, also some Halt and Catch Fire, which I find exciting, and also a thing that's like a Doctor Who, not a spin-off show, but a show that's, I don't know, something, I didn't look into it. The episode was written by Suzanne Heathcote, who is this season's head writer.
Hello, Suzanne.
Hello, Suzanne.
Yes, hello, Suzanne. I don't know why she got the job. She hasn't done anything. Or at least, according to her IMDb, she has hardly done anything. She has worked on a Walking Dead spin-off show. But from what I understand, she's like an actress and playwright?
Yeah, maybe if she's more like a theater writer, then that wouldn't be on IMDb. Okay, let's get into it. We start with a scene that is set in 1974, which is what we find out from the title page.
Right, now we get years as well.
Yes, besides places, we also get years now. We're watching a gymnastics training happening. There is this girl who is the gymnast. There is her coach, who is Yelly. And then there is this boy who looks real creepy. There's some Russian yelling while she's doing her thingies.
Most of it is encouraging.
Oh, cool.
Just like in a very aggressive way.
I really enjoyed just watching some shots of gymnastics.
It was nice.
Then she does not land perfectly, and then the coach yells some mean things. This was translated in the subtitles, that's why I know. Oh, and we find out that this girl's name is Dasha. Then she returns to the lockers and the boy gives her flowers and they kiss and she bites his tongue and then she kills him and then she pours this magnesium, probably powder, all over his whole face.
I the only thing I have to add is how much I hate this thing that the coach that's translated, that the coach screams at her how winners have to sacrifice everything. And that's just, no, no, you really don't have to. If you're good at something, then you can do it in like 40-hour work week. I'm sorry that I have to tell you this. I get that competitive sports is like something else, but that's why competitive sports is dumb as fuck.
Yeah, and it's very harmful.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's a human rights violation and should be banned.
Yes.
Strong opinion on sports here from this couch potato.
Yeah.
Next, we go to a very fancy big house. And we do not get a title page. And it's a shame because I would like to know where this is.
Yeah. I assumed that we were in Rome. Still like somewhere on the outskirts of Rome.
No, we're in Spain.
But, oh, I see. I was not paying attention at all.
We zoom in on this very pretty, this is my opinion.
She is beautiful.
Place.
Oh.
Place. What we see is, yeah, this very fancy house. And we follow some children run into the house, put all their fingers in a cake, and then go into this big room where there seems to be a wedding happening, and the bride has a little speech. So, oh, who is she marrying? Oh my god, it's Villanelle!
Yes. And then Villanelle has a speech, which is quite different.
Oh, God.
Villanelle, like, before she starts, she has this look like, here we go, I guess.
She says, if I had known getting married was this much fun, I'd have done it loads more times.
I noticed that she's not using her regular accent. And we also don't find out what name everyone knows her by. She makes a lot of jokes that just don't land well at all. Villanelle goes on to talk about this terrible breakup that she had just before she started this relationship and how she's so much happier now that her ex is dead. Then they eat some cake.
In the middle of all of these, Villanelle keeps looking around.
Yeah, she's barely paying attention to her own wedding. There's this older lady that we suddenly see in the doorway, and Villanelle just straight up runs into her and throws her onto the table.
Yep.
Gotta respect that.
And they start fighting, and then everyone else joins in.
I find that trope so funny. Like, did that ever happen in the whole of human history?
No, this is not plausible at all. People just start throwing food at each other. And then we see Villanelle and this lady being driven off in a car with their bloody noses, not talking. Then we go to London, specifically to the MI6 offices, which, again, we find out from the title card. In the MI6 offices, Carolyn is talking to a guy that we find out a little later is called Mo. And she is explaining to him that someone is now gonna be overseeing her work. Because the MI6 finally decided that all the bullshit she's been up to is maybe...
Bullshit.
And we hear that Diane is the person in charge who decided this and also chose someone dreadful for the job. So they go to the canteen where they order some food, and Carolyn decides that she wants the orecchiette. And then, like, immediately after, we see that her and Mo both got the orecchiette. And she's also just like, offers him Parmesan cheese and just puts it on his dish before he answers, and she also calls it Parmigiano. I just hate her. And then we meet this dreadful dude. This is Paul Bradwell. And this is someone that when many episodes ago Carolyn was talking to Helen, remember the old lady hot? Helen mentioned that Paul's boyfriend left him, and this is the Paul.
I think the essence of their conversation is that Carolyn is very good at being passive-aggressive.
Yeah, her final remark to him is that doesn't matter that he took her office because she doesn't even know where her office is.
Yeah.
I I want to mention again after a while, the colors in this scene, I think, was the first time I realized that MI6 is just always completely brown, and I love it. I mean, I hate it. So Paul mentions that Carolyn is gonna have a meeting with Diane, and then we go to this meeting with Diane, where Diane just names all the things that Carolyn did wrong.
Diane, who is not Helen, old lady, hot, which I was very confused about.
Yeah, me too.
This probably means that they finally busted her because of Eve getting shot. Until then, she's been doing all these unauthorized things. The things that she's done is 3 cleanup operations unauthorized, the employment of former MI5 agents unauthorized, safe housing an FSB agent unauthorized. I am thinking this is Constantine.
Yeah.
And the former MI5 agents that she employed are Eve, Bill, and Elena. No, Elena was not an agent. So it goes back to the first season. And then we find out also that Hugo is suing the MI6 for the injuries he got in Rome.
Which unauthorized. Means he's alive.
Yes, he's alive.
Yeah, I'm very glad to know he's alive. And then, besides all of this, Carolyn also has 416.27 pounds of unpaid lunches at the canteen, which is my favorite detail.
Yeah, it reminds me of, remember a couple of years ago when that one guy from the Slovenian parliament stole something from the
sandwich and then resigned
at the parliament, and then he had to resign because of it. It was my favorite thing to have ever happened in Slovenian politics.
And it's incredible because the whole lunch at the parliament cost you like €2 because, you know, all these...
If you have a lot of money, then you shouldn't pay for anything.
Yeah. So Diane finishes with, and that's to say nothing of Polastri's fate. So we still don't know. Is she dead? What's her fate? So we go to the next scene to find out. And we are in a Korean supermarket where we see Eve, and she is buying lots of wine and lots of instant food.
And she is depressed.
And she also is clearly still suffering from her injury because, yeah, it is limiting her movement. What I really enjoyed when I first watched this is that you can totally get the impression that Eve actually moved to Korea or is staying in Korea because all you get is this Korean supermarket and people speaking Korean.
Yep.
And it's only when we see the title page that we find out where we are. When Eve gets to the cashier is speaking to her friend, the other cashier, about how she's going to Rome on her honeymoon and she's gonna only eat spaghetti. No sushi, just spaghetti. And how Rome is the most romantic city or something like
she
that.
She says, and nothing says romance like Rome, which...
And what she should have said is, you can't spell romance without Rome.
Yes, and this will be a theme in this episode. A lot of mirroring of what happened in the previous season.
When Eve leaves the store and she's walking on the street, all of her things fall out of the bag.
After we see Eve pick up all her things from the ground, we get this title page, which tells us we are in New Malden, England.
Let's go to a better city.
Yes, let's go to Barcelona.
Wow.
And let's take some time to talk about Barcelona. What are our experiences? We are going to a new city and we can talk about it.
I love Barcelona so much. It is one of my favorite cities. I only went there the one time. But it was so beautiful. It was, the weather was perfect, and I kept being so overwhelmed by how aesthetically pleasing everything was that I just kept crying, and it was great.
I've been to Barcelona once, and I wasn't a huge fan, but I do still have a lot of really nice memories, especially of some food that I ate there. That was amazing. One of the two foods that I ate there that I loved was roasted black olives. And after I came back, I had no idea what these olives that I ate were. And then one time I went to a lunch and ate some olives that were those kinds of olives. That was like 8 years later and was like, oh my God, what is this? So now I know.
So I was also in Barcelona just the once when I went there with Nina. I think partly why it was so good was because the city is just so great. And partly is just also because...
we were in love.
I don't know, but kind of yes, that. But also just because, you know, we made it so good for ourselves.
We like, got a really nice place.
Yeah, somehow it's like the one time we managed to enjoy life. I think we are both very bad at that in general.
I mean, not completely. I remember a lot of anxiety, but...
yeah. Yeah.
More so enjoying life than usual.
And my favorite parts were everything we saw that Gaudí did, especially Parc Güell, where we also once went at night because it's open at night and you can just hang out for free. And then we also, yeah, both cried in Sagrada Familia.
I've never had this experience in a church. Like, I do not care about churches. I just felt like, okay, I'm in Barcelona. I guess this is one of the things that I should do. But then we stepped in and I just started bawling. I was just so overwhelmed with how beautiful it was.
Sagrada Familia actually has a really relatively high entrance fee. I know I was on the fence of whether I should go or not.
Yeah.
But I would say, just as a recommendation, if you like pretty things and you are able to afford it, definitely go. So those are our thoughts on Barcelona, and now let's see what our friends from this show are doing in Barcelona. What we see first is the inside of Dasha's apartment, which looks like she imported all her furniture from Russia to specifically look like an apartment of a Russian grandma on a TV show. Well, Dasha explains that they, meaning the 12, had been watching Villanelle since Rome. They kinda want her back, which is not explained why, except that, like, just because she's so great.
Yeah, basically. Here we find out that Dasha trained Villanelle.
Also, Dasha has a lot of little monkey statues and I guess loves a saying about slowly catching a monkey. And then Villanelle wants to be a beekeeper. Just kidding.
Villanelle says that she wants to be a keeper.
And if anyone is wondering what the fuck is a keeper, I can tell you that we heard this word once before, and it was, I checked, in season 1, episode 7, when Villanelle is talking to Constantine, and she's asking Constantine if he knows who the 12 are, and he explains that he does not, because he's not a keeper, because only if you are on the position of a keeper, I guess that means you are the keeper of the secret of the 12's identities.
Sounds like a fun job, knowing 12 names.
Yeah, I think it's implied that you also do other things, but...
I haven't seen any proof of that.
But Villanelle decided, I guess, that that's what she wants to do, and...
Dasha isn't very excited about it, but she's like, okay, I can work with that.
Do we have any theories for why Villanelle wants to do that? Is it just so she will find out who the 12 are and then she can do with that what she wants?
Also, she just wants to be the most important.
Yeah, I think she's been bored with this job and just wants more. Anyway, then they hold each other's throats.
Each with just one hand.
They are strong. Strong, independent ladies.
Feminism.
Also, Dasha says that she is so invested in the idea of Villanelle coming back because the 12 will allow her to move back to Russia if she gets them Villanelle. And then we get to a shot of Kenny's legs. It was fun because I immediately knew that it was Kenny's legs before I remembered.
Yeah, he has very distinct legs.
Kenny is cycling by the canal and...
whistling.
Listening to music.
Whistling.
And he arrives to an office, which is where he seems to work now. We meet one of his co-workers, who is very upset because some bastard's been stealing his Tangfastics, which is some kind of Haribo candy. We see another one of his co-workers who Kenny barely says hi to. And then the first co-worker asks Kenny if he's coming to the pub quiz, because they really need him there for all the football questions.
Is this something that has been established?
No.
No.
Okay. Just now checking. We are establishing it now.
Now. This is what matters here in this episode.
Yes.
Kenny declines and says that he's meeting someone.
Yeah, which apparently in this office is frowned upon to have friends.
No, it's not frowned upon to have friends. Having friends is just surprising, but wanting to hang out with your friends instead of your co-workers, that's what's frowned upon.
So then we hear that apparently this is some kind of a journalism office.
Where they write articles about animals.
Because this dude has written a piece on invasive jellyfish migration.
And Kenny is Googling stuff about seahorses.
So we hear that Kenny has not actually written anything. And then he does some seahorse research, but then opens a file that has a photo of Frank and a photo of Fat Panda with all the info that we saw many times, and I'm wondering if he composed this graphic and then
he made it just so that he could put it in the trash.
Yeah, then he looks around suspiciously if anyone's watching, and then he moves this file into the bin.
Sorry,
this file. I get that this file is there only for us, but it's just, you could have at least used Fat Panda's actual name. At least that. Why does it say Fat Panda? Please, God. Then we see Eve at her new workplace, which is a Korean restaurant. She's working in the kitchen and she's making mandu, and she looks not great. And after we see her working, she has a conversation with her boss, where we learn that she got this job via her auntie. Her boss doesn't understand why Eve doesn't want to work at the front as a waitress. And I say to this boss that you don't understand what not wanting to talk to people is like.
Yeah, boss, have you ever worked as a waitress?
Anyway, Eve asserts that she likes the kitchen, thank you very much, and the boss drops it and says, okay. And then in the background, we see, it's zoomed in on, we see...
Not so much in the background.
Yeah, we see what I assume is a K-drama, where there is someone tied to the chair and another person shoots this person, which again is mirroring the situation we had in the last episode of season 2.
In a very subtle way, I must say. Next, we go to Eve's apartment, where she's drinking wine and watching some more TV. I noted here that she has a good outfit on. She looks very good in some shorts and a baggy striped t-shirt.
Yeah, we get some more clues that Eve is depressed because her apartment is very messy. Also, this is a new place, not her house. She's living in an apartment that is small, and what she decides to watch on TV is commercials, which I really liked. It continued nicely this trend from the previous season, where the only little times where she was able to stop thinking about all the shit going down in her life was when she was shopping or listening to some commercials or something.
Oh yeah, and her buying the windows was in the first episode of season 2 after her confrontation with Villanelle, so this is very much a parallel.
Next, we see Konstantin, who is magnet shopping. And we don't get a title page because we get a different very subtle clue that he's in London, which is the magnets that he's buying. We also find out that he has 3 phones and they are all ringing. And first his daughter Irina calls him, then an unknown number, and then he gets some texts in Russian. For some reason, these are not subtitled.
The texts are, your recertification is expired, contact head office, and your status is unknown and must be registered.
And they are all in caps lock.
Yes. So basically, this is the 12 being like, okay, so some things are shifting in what, like, your role here is. You should contact us and let's make this clear. Anyway, he buys a London bus magnet.
And he tells the cashier that he's buying this magnet for his daughter because she hates everything about London.
Now to another mentor of Villanelle.
Yeah, we go back to Barcelona, where Dasha is teaching some children gymnastics, and she's doing it partly in English and partly in Spanish for some reason.
Villanelle gives some advice to the kids on how to piss Dasha off, and it is to say, Russia is a corrupt state clinging to the shadows of its Soviet glory.
I liked that.
Yeah, I guess Dasha loves Putin. Confirmed.
Then Dasha sends the kids home. When the kids are gone, Villanelle and Dasha are talking, and Dasha says that the 12 will promote Villanelle with full benefits if she first proves that she is up to the job. What do we think these benefits are? Like,
dental.
Yeah, dental. health insurance, paid vacation.
Maternity leave.
And the way for Villanelle to prove herself is murder. Dasha is trying to convince her by saying that it's a political agitator because it's been established that Villanelle is in this for the international politics.
Yep. And also that it's close by because it's also been established that Villanelle hates to travel. Then we get a little scene of Eve again at her work, where she's rolling her eyes at her co-worker's love life. Then she walks home. And then we watch her spill some wine, and she wipes it with toilet paper. And then she looks at this toilet paper and thinks of Kenny and decides to text him. And she sends him a picture of the toilet paper with a few toilet paper emojis. And she's so happy with herself when she
laughs so much. This is like the first time she's laughed in this episode. It's incredible.
If there's anyone else who, like me, did not get this throwback, it's connected to the very beginning of the first season in the offices of MI6, where Eve goes to the toilet and Kenny gives her toilet paper.
Mm-hmm. Throughout this scene, I just kept on thinking how empty Eve's life is without Villanelle.
And what she thinks is wrong is the Nico thing.
Yeah.
So from this small studio apartment, we move to an apartment with a big TV.
Have you noticed that, like, there is TV playing in almost every scene in this episode?
This is also a TV trope for some reason, that people just have TV on, like, all the time. It's strange.
So we see Konstantin watching this large TV, and he's also drinking. And he listens to the messages that he got on his phone. Just so many boomer tropes, like having a TV, listening to messages on your phone. And one of the messages is an upset one that asks him, where's the bloody report? And says that Naviko is gonna be mad. And that's some fun stuff to look forward to trying to understand.
And this person, I think, is the first one in all three seasons to call Konstantin Kostya. Mm-hmm. I think we never heard that before.
Mm-hmm. The second message is from Irina, who wants him to come home because she's annoyed with her mom and her mom's boyfriend. So I guess Konstantin and his wife got divorced. Yeah, I guess she was annoyed because of all the stress that he brought
into the kidnapping
and stuff. She kept on being kidnapped and she was like, that's enough. And she somehow found a boyfriend during all this kidnapping, because I don't think there was much time when she wasn't kidnapped.
I just want to say that there is nothing implying that Constantine and his wife are divorced.
Great.
All these monogamous expectations of ours.
Yeah. Did we say what Irina says about England? Irina says that England is a damp dump of a country.
God, she's right.
And I support her and respect her for it.
So then the doorbell rings?
Yes, and Constantine gets some food delivered that he did not order. And he's pretty excited about it. smells it a little, checks it out. He also gets a message.
Which is translated as, time to go fishing. Back to Eve. Eve wakes up screaming, which is another parallel.
To the first season, first episode. Yeah. But this time she has a reason, because there's just someone in her room. It's Kenny, though. So that's very nice.
He got her drunk message and was worried, so he tracked her phone and went into her apartment to watch her sleep.
Yep.
I love Kenny.
And he's like, you shouldn't leave the door open, considering how many people want to kill you.
I'm going to choose to believe that he just got in and was trying to decide what to do next.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So then they have tea, they sit on the floor, and they are very cute.
It is very sweet.
They are so happy to see each other. Yeah. Like, they don't know how to say it, but it really shows, and they're smiling and laughing at each other.
I didn't like how he tries to apologize to her.
She should be apologizing to him.
Yeah, Kenny is just too good for this world, and by this world I mean the Killing Eve universe.
We also find out that Kenny went to see Eve in the hospital, but they wouldn't let him visit, and that it was tourists that found her when she was shot, which must have been a fun trauma for them to acquire.
We also get some more information about Kenny's job, which is that he works at Bitter Pill as an open source investigator. Anyway, Kenny says that he likes working for someone with integrity, which is a nice burn to Carolyn and Eve.
Yep. And then he's like, are you still in touch with? And Eve goes, oh god, no, I'm finished with her. That's all done with. And Kenny's like, oh, I was gonna say Nico. So then we get this very cute scene when Kenny's asking Eve if she ever worries about the 12 and tells her that MI6 is not worrying about them because they shut everything down. So I guess that means that whatever Carolyn was doing was the only part of MI6 that had anything to do with the 12. And Eve is like, no, I don't care. It's none of our business. It's fine. We don't have to worry. And Kenny's like, right, yes, you're right. Yes, anyway, I've been looking into them loads. And he's like, so good. No shit.
The way they both said those lines, it was perfect.
What Kenny's trying to tell her is that he noticed some activity on Frank's and Jungwoo's accounts, I guess after they were dead, which means... And then we don't find out what it means. So I'm sure this will go super well for us and we will totally get it.
I didn't write any of this down. I just wrote down that they hold hands, which was very sweet.
Aww. Then they're saying goodbye and Kenny invites Eve to come for beers. And he thinks they should meet in his office because that's fun. And also that's where he spends most evenings and weekends.
Yep. Yay!
And then he tells her that he thinks she could do with people.
He also tells her, you don't seem very happy, which is especially sad considering, like, this is the happiest we've seen her in a while.
Can I do this whole dialogue? Because this dialogue is my favorite of the episode. Kenny, as he's leaving, he says, you don't seem very... And Eve interrupts him saying, no, Kenny, I'm fine. And he says, no, I know, you just don't seem very happy. And I love this so much because of this distinction between being fine and actually, you know, enjoying life. And a lot of people like to pretend how being fine is enough, and that's stupid. And I just love that this episode brought that to the surface, and it was very sweet.
It's so sweet. It's
yeah, I gotta say, I love Kenny.
Yes.
And then we move to a scene that is not so touching, but it's murder.
Villanelle is dressed as a postal worker, and she is in Girona, one of those. I'm sorry, Catalan / Spanish people listening to this.
She comes into this little shop and changes the sign that says open to closed.
This shop is a spice shop, which I hope it's real and I want to go there.
Well, we have one just here.
No, but this one was so beautiful. I just want to look at it.
Anyway, she goes up to the lady that's working there and asks her about her family business.
Yeah, she goes with the pickup line, "My grandpa is honest too." Yeah, and because she mentions that her grandpa has heart issues, the shop owner offers to give her saffron because saffron's, I guess, good for that.
So she goes up a ladder and Villanelle uses this opportunity to throw her down.
It's so horrible watching her fall in that pose. I hate to rewatch it. Well, turns out this fall didn't actually kill her because she gets up and attacks Villanelle. And Villanelle attacks her and bashes her with some spice container. And then I guess she's really dead, which I don't know how Villanelle knows.
Anyway, she props the body up and throws some, what is it?
Paprika.
And as she's leaving, she has this to say about Dasha's murder. Untouchable.
At the same time, it's an homage and also making fun of Dasha.
Yeah.
I mean, that is their relationship, so makes sense.
Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, then she leaves the shop in slow motion and looks very, I don't know, alive?
Yes.
She seems happy.
Then we have a scene with Carolyn singing, listening to music, and she is maybe unpacking, maybe just checking what Kenny had packed.
Yeah. She's just being controlling. She's not doing anything productive.
Yeah, because apparently she and Kenny had moved, which was Kenny's idea. And she sees that Kenny decided to keep this foam hand and has a little argument with him about it because she hates joy and nice memories.
Yep.
She asks Kenny to help, but he's not gonna be told what to do anymore. He's gonna go do some work. And Carolyn's like, "They're making you work on weekends?" And he's like, "You made me work on the weekends." Yeah, they have like this whole argument where Carolyn tells him that she's never going to apologize, which, fuck her. Mm-hmm. And then they finish by talking about food, which I think is nice.
Yes, they leave in anticipation of fish and chips and sausage.
When they're having this argument, Carolyn tells Kenny about how she lived in a house with his father, her ex-husband, for years, even though she hated this house. And she explains this as a life is just a series of trade-offs. And I want to say, Carolyn, you can make a compromise after telling someone that you don't like something.
No, divorce is the only
option. No, divorce is better.
Divorce is easier than marriage.
Yeah.
Then Eve goes to see Nico. She walks up to this fancy-looking building where there is a receptionist, and the receptionist tells her that Nico is in the garden. And from this, we kind of figure that this is like a very fancy psychiatric hospital or something similar.
He seems like a shell of a person, like completely ruined. And that makes sense. Yes. Everyone should be considering everything that happened.
Yes, I really liked this. For the first time, this show actually showed a little bit of what a consequence of suffering something as traumatic as seeing someone get murdered would be like for just a regular person. It makes so much sense that Nico is just fucked up forever, can't take care of himself, can't lead a normal life. Eve brought Nico some candy, but not the green ones. She ate those. How nice. And she also brought him some papers to sign and something about selling the house. And also Nico is wearing a shirt with planets, and I really like that.
It was a nice shirt.
Yeah, like a nice t-shirt and then a plaid button down over that, and good.
Eve in this scene is really, she is still trying to control Nico, obviously, but she's hiding it behind support, which is so gross.
Oh, yeah.
So bad.
Nico mentions that Gemma's parents were told that Gemma killed herself. Also that MI6 could, you know, wash its hands of this. And he's naturally very upset about this. And then, like you mentioned, Tamara, Eve is trying to be like, oh, yeah, we'll get through this. It's gonna be okay. And he tells her that he does not want her to try to fix this. Like, she can't fix it and he doesn't want it. And I'm proud of him.
I am too.
Yeah, and he says that he deserves more than Eve, which, oh, what a relief for him to realize that. I feel like this would be a really nice way to say goodbye to Nico, with him realizing this and moving on.
Yep.
I actually wrote down exactly what he said because I was touched by it. He says, and if we're being honest, we'd both admit that I deserve more. And yeah, it's so true. Like, I don't find him interesting at all as a character, but he definitely deserves so much more.
Yeah.
And it's so good to see him finally realize this. I guess he has gone through some therapy in that place where he's at.
Yeah,
I very strongly believe that he is a much better person than Eve. He deserves better. And also that I do not want to watch a show where he is a character in it.
Yeah.
He bores me to death.
Yeah.
Before that, Nico says that Eve was always at the center of their relationship, which I think was brought up before that. And Eve says that she didn't want to be. And even though, of course, I think Eve is a bad person, I also genuinely believe her. I don't think she went into this relationship thinking, oh, I'm gonna make this guy's life all about me. She's just very selfish, and she deserves someone equally selfish to be in a relationship with. And this someone obviously is Villanelle. And also, I identify with that. But you know, you should, you need to know what you want from life, not be Eve.
Exactly.
And pick up this poor guy who can't stand up for himself.
Yeah, Eve just really does not know herself well enough to be able to be in a healthy relationship.
Well, yeah, you're so right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now we move on to the last act of this episode.
Kenny...
Yeah.
Let's just stop here.
Okay. Well, and this is how the episode ends.
This is how the show ends.
So we see Kenny listening to music at his office. He's eating his coworker's candy, which now we find out that he's the one that stole it. What an asshole. He deserved to die. And he's looking at some, I guess, the bank stuff that he talked about.
Yeah, it's like he opens up some financial documents, which we don't see, makes a shocked face. It's never explained.
And we cut to Eve chopping meat.
Yeah, Eve is like dissembling a chicken, which is fun to watch, not really. And then there's more of the co-workers' love life talk in the background. At this point, Eve decides to weigh in and share her very important opinion that everyone wants to hear. And she tells this dude that the girl he's seeing is obviously lying to him, and she doesn't actually want to see him, and that everyone knows this. And then he starts crying, and she tells him, you're not even crying because of her, you're crying because you feel stupid, because you were stupid. And that's a little throwback to the previous scene where we forgot to mention that Eve starts crying. So, yeah. Good insight, Eve. Good job. So she goes outside and decides to call Kenny. And she's like, so I do want to meet you, actually, for beer. And he's like, okay, well, I'll let you know where. And she hangs up on him. And after Eve hangs up on Kenny, he thinks he hears something in the office. Then we see Eve on some public transit bus or metro or something.
Well, first we don't see Eve, we see a book.
Yes, right, you're that right.
We see, not even Eve is reading.
We see a book called Vixen's Bite, and it's about the Norway's favorite murderess by some Norwegian writer. It's a fake book, I googled it.
Oh, really? Wow, that's sad.
Eve sees this book, and maybe the person on the cover looks a little bit like Villanelle even, but mostly she's like, ugh, you think you know about murderesses? I know about murderesses. You all have no idea. And she like rolls her eyes at the book. And then she gets to the office and
Kenny's not there, but there's still music playing from his headphones.
Which is so creepy and I hate it. And then
it's like a scary movie type of thing.
Yeah, and another thing I hate is when she calls him and his phone is there.
Yeah. And then she's just walking around and we see in the background, because there are all these windows, that his body falls down.
Oh, this is like, it's kind of something like my least favorite scene, but also I think it's well done. It's like so shocking to see for me every time. Just his body falling past that window. Just silently falling.
Yeah. And Eve runs down and there's his body. Kenny is dead. And yeah, the episode ends with Eve looking up.
Yeah.
Well, I hate it.
I also hate it.
I am not okay with this.
The first time we watched this, I honestly, even though we see his body, we know it's him, but I still believed that it's possible that we're gonna find out that actually this wasn't him and he is alive. I don't know why, because it's so clear that it's him, but it was just, I just couldn't believe I know he wasn't exactly an important character in season 2, but you know, he's still one of the most important core characters, and I just couldn't believe that they just murdered him, especially not in the first episode of a season.
Yeah, and I feel like even, especially because he wasn't such a big character in season 2, this is even sadder, because it's like, yeah, wow, we did not get enough of him.
Yeah, we get this amazing episode where we see a lot of him and you're excited that finally you're seeing Kenny again, and then he dies. Well, not cool, but we do still have some segments to get through in this episode. So, up and at 'em.
Should we start with the Russian corner?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, there are quite a few things concerning Russia in this episode, and I will touch on a few of them. First, speaking in Russian. In the first scene, I think the Russian was quite awkward. Like, it was mainly spoken by the trainer, and like, I think everything was correct, but he was speaking in an accent that sounded like my accent, so that's not good. Anyway, the Russian that I thought was really good was when someone called Konstantin when he was listening to his messages. That Russian, that person is Russian, I am sure of it. Second point is the cookie thing that Villanelle noticed at Dasha's place. Villanelle called it korushka. What it says on the label is kopviska. So that's something. This is not a real thing.
Uh-huh. So it's not a real word?
No, it does not make sense as a Russian word, which is something that we will see later in this season as well. Then the third thing that I wanted to talk about was how glad I am that we have this scene with gymnastics, because gymnastics is one of those very Russian things. Like, Russia is very good at gymnastics and ballet and chess. Those are the things that Russians are very good at, and
I'm not sure why.
How about ice skating?
Ice skating, sure, yeah. There are like these things that just you go to Russia to learn them. This is one of them, so I appreciated that. That felt very true. That's it for the Russian corner this week. There was much more to say than maybe all of season two, so that was fun.
Next up is Uti.
Whoop whoop!
We have three outfits in this episode. The first one is Villanelle's wedding dress. She is wearing black cropped pants and a tailcoat.
I didn't notice that.
I thought it was just a blazer.
No, it's, you can see it when she's walking towards Dasha. Under this, she is wearing a black sheer top that has some weird shell looking boob thingies.
Is that part She's of the mermaid. Top or is it just a bra?
I also first thought it was a bra, but it's a part of the top. And it's really hard to tell if she is even wearing a bra under this. I mean, probably she is, but I hope she's not.
Of course, yeah.
And she's wearing a small corsage on her tailcoat and some minimal gold earrings. And her hair is in a ponytail. And she is wearing the ugliest stiletto sandals in the world. The shoes in this episode, I mean, there's just two of them, but they're just so bad.
I thought they were neutral.
I didn't even notice
also
them.
I think it's weird for Villanelle to wear heels voluntarily.
Maybe it's the character.
Maybe. Anyway, these stiletto sandals have many, many straps. So it's one of those things where you have the strap in the middle and then across you have a bunch of straps up to your ankle. And I just think they're ugly as fuck.
Tell us how you really feel.
The next outfit is the one she's wearing at the gymnastics place. And she is wearing this pretty interesting white shirt that consists of two different styles. On the one side, she has a Russian collar and it's a button-up shirt. And then the other side has no collar and a split front. So actually, you can't button it up to your neck. Just at the neck, there is one extra button added. And I wouldn't wear this anymore, but like 4 years ago, I would die for this shirt.
Ooh.
Wow. I just remember a white shirt.
Yeah.
And this shirt has cap sleeves. She's wearing some pretty big silver earrings that are those two-sided things that the front and the back shows. And she's wearing some army green pants that have many extra layers of fabric all over it. I tried to explain those pants and I gave up because it's just stuff. She's also wearing this black leather wrap bracelet and really ugly brown sandals. They're just ugly. I didn't even write down
Fuck
what they're like.
You.
I was just like, they're
ugly. Birkenstock. They are not literally Birkenstock. They just are in the same style.
No, they're not.
Aren't you gay, Tamara?
Yes.
I once again did not notice the shoes, so.
And then the last outfit is just the work outfit that she's wearing, which is a brown, the ugliest shade of brown ever. A jumpsuit.
Yeah. Very poopy.
And with just some company logo and also a baseball hat with a company logo. And I think, in my personal opinion, the ugliest wig yet.
Yes, yeah. Here I do agree with
Me
you.
Me too.
Yeah. It's so bad that it makes Jodie Comer look ugly.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. Also, I think I need to Google that to check, but I think I realized that a jumpsuit is called a jumpsuit because you wear it when you jump out of a plane.
That's... Wow.
Yeah. There's so much fashion that we wear that's from, like, military uniforms. Also, a trench coat is literally something that you wear in the trenches, you know?
Oh!
What? Yep.
Thank you for sharing this, Tamara. This is one of the best things I've learned on this podcast.
I'm very happy to provide.
This is what makes it worth it.
Okay, so should we tell each other what our favorite outfits are?
Yes. Go for it, Naya.
I would say the second one, actually. I just remember watching the scenes with the second one and just thinking Villanelle looks really good in that, and I liked the style, but, like, everything you said when you described the outfit was like, I've never seen it. Truly, I will have to look at it again because this all sounds wild.
I feel that often with Uti.
Yeah, and I do want to say I liked the shoes in the first one just fine, and I loved the shoes in the second one.
You are valid.
Thank you.
My favorite outfit was the wedding one. I loved it so much. I would get married in that, and I don't want to get married at all. I am sad to hear that that was not a bra, because I just loved that, the idea of just having your bra shown at your wedding.
What a power move.
I know.
I do, like, if it's any consolation, she's possibly not wearing a bra at all.
Yeah,
that's okay.
I choose the second one because it's just so conceptual, really interesting to look at, you know, and I also agree that Villanelle looks really good in it. I think the colors really suit her. Even though I hated the sandals, it's fine. I still like them more than the first ones because I thought the first ones also kind of clashed with the outfit. But yeah, that's my choice.
So I guess it's time to rate this app.
Yes.
My rating is Almodovar's movie Pain and Glory. Before I saw this movie, I wasn't sure if I want to see it. I was like, what does this old man that's been making movies for 40 years have to say in the year of 2019? Oh, he wants to make a movie about himself? Whatever. But my God, if this wasn't the same year that Portrait was made, this would be absolutely the best movie of the year.
Wow.
I warmly, warmly recommend it. I think it's just his storytelling is so amazing. Just the way he builds a story. And the reason I chose it as the rating for this episode is because one of the main themes in it is reconnecting. And I felt that in this episode, we had a lot of that. So we had Eve reconnecting with Kenny, and Kenny with Eve, and Eve trying to reconnect with Nico, and
Kenny's box of nostalgia.
And Kenny's box of nostalgia, and also Kenny and Carolyn were working on their relationship, which isn't exactly reconnecting, but in a way it is. And
Dasha reconnecting with
Villanelle. Yes, exactly, and Dasha reconnecting with Villanelle.
All right, thank you. Asterisk, when Tamara says portrait, she means Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I had some trouble thinking of a rating this time. So I had a few ideas and none of them feel quite right, but I decided to go with Jane Unlimited, the book by Kristen Cashore. And I chose it because there are a lot of storylines happening in this book, and that's mainly what I felt about this episode. I liked both of these pieces of media, but especially in this episode, it felt like a bit much. We had to go to so many different locations. We had to follow so many different people's storylines that it felt a bit overwhelming. And
I just want to say that I loved this book. I know not all of my friends agree, but it's, for me, it was a very joyous experience to read it, and I recommend checking it out.
That's why I said that I don't think it's a great rating, because I did actually enjoy that in that book.
I was not feeling overwhelmed by it. I didn't mind it, but I was very surprised with how much happens in this episode. So I have a rating, and it's arguably not queer media, though I think, like, for more abstract art, you can't really say it's straight, so it can't really be queer either. But my rating is the tweet from Horse eBooks that says, everything happens so much.
Yes.
It's also one of my favorite tweets by Horsey Books and my favorite tweets in general. And I relate to it a lot.
Do you want to spin it in a queer way?
Yeah, so to make this thing more queer for sure, I do want to add that Tamara wrote an article about horse ebooks for a student paper about art history, etc. And as you might know, Tamara is queer, so I mentioned this dilemma about queerness or non-queerness of horse ebooks earlier to my co-hosts, and they were both very supportive in me choosing this as my rating.
We love and support.
Yeah. I think I would have chosen it anyway, and I will defend the idea of horse ebooks as queer media if needed. For example, there's one other iconic tweet by horse ebooks, which is leg butt, which some people have commented on that this is the correct pronunciation of LGBT.
I don't think I remember this, thank you.
Wow.
Okay, so our game tonight is gonna be maybe like not so much a game and more just like a talk about yourself.
I was gonna say that I feel like a lot of our games cannot in any sense be counted as games. And that's how it should be.
A game is also something that is notoriously difficult to define. It does not have like a clear definition, so don't worry about it.
For tonight's game, we are gonna imagine what we would wear at our own wedding, were we to have one.
So I don't have any particular desire to get married, but I do love the idea of having the ceremony of getting married. I like the idea of like just setting a day to celebrate the fact that you love someone and to celebrate that person in your life. And I also love the idea of taking the opportunity to wear something you really like and eat the food you love, to dance with your friends to music that you enjoy. That's my favorite part that I really want. So I think what I would ideally wear is a jumpsuit. It can be white, but I remember once seeing somewhere on the internet like a wedding jumpsuit that was white, but then it had lots of very colorful embroidery. I want this specifically.
That sounds great.
That sounds amazing.
Thank you so much.
I also would like to get married specifically for the event, and getting to pick all of the music is also my dream. Obviously, my future wife will just have the same taste in music as me.
of course.
And I would like to wear a floor-length dress at my wedding, just because this isn't something that's practical in real life. And I want to have an option to wear a dress like that. I don't know what style exactly it would be like, but at the moment I'm pretty interested in historical dress. I wouldn't try to emulate anything historical. I would just borrow some stuff from historical dress, mix it up a little bit.
I do not want to get married. I want to share a wedding dress that I imagined myself in at one point when I was, I don't know, like 12. When I got the idea from society that young girls must picture their wedding day, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, let's do this. So the dress was like a goth, think Evanescence music video, red, black thing. Of like, I don't know, I think maybe a red corset and a black, like, long dress. It was awful. Let's not think about it. Okay. What I would wear now is either a romper, because I love wedding rompers, or I mostly see myself wearing a suit, and I'm thinking of maybe something like what you know, that suit that Kristen Stewart wears in Happiest Season. Uh-huh. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. So something like that, but maybe more colorful, because I think it's fun for a wedding. Like, it's not just a suit. It should be something fun. And I think adding some colors would be nice.
Nice.
Yes. This was a fun game, I think.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a fun episode, because that's how I feel.
Also a fun episode.
Thank you, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Queering Eve. We will record another one. We release new episodes every Tuesday evening. Have a nice week, and remember to lock up your candy and also your front door. And after Kenny hangs up on Eve, he thinks, nope, sorry.
I was like, what? That doesn't sound like Kenny. Not the Kenny I know.